Blog Talk Radio. quiet river, God's gentle voice divine. Trusting in you I go forward, leaving all doubt far behind. Peaceful and quiet river, flowing through heart and mind. Source of my courage and wisdom, you taught my spirit to fly. Flow, river, flow, soothing my soul. Flow, river, flow. Song of life, music that dances within me, painting the darkness with light. Peaceful and quiet river, you are my special friend. You're always there when I need you, faithful and true to the end. Flow, river, flow, soothing my soul. Flow, river, flow. Flowing through heart and mind, source of my courage and wisdom, you taught my spirit to fly beyond the sky.
another edition of Continue Mission. I am your host, James McCormick. And let me tell you something, folks. We got a great show in line tonight. Tonight on Continue Mission, we're going to be discussing the teaching of critical race theory and the trail of tears in schools. You know, what are the positives? What are the negatives of doing it or not doing it? And why are the political parties so divided over it? Also, we will discuss what truly is the definition of liberal and conservative. A lot of folks don't really understand what that definition is. Christians, however, understand that definition because Jesus Christ, a lot of people would equate as a liberal. A liberal because he fed the sick, he healed, you know, he fed the hungry, he healed the sick. You know, he walked and he talked and he worked with people that others would look down on. You know, Christ is a great example for those of you that are out there and you're struggling with, you know, what's, you know, which way I should go. Just do the right thing. That's what I tell folks. Sometimes the right thing isn't the popular thing. Sometimes, you know, the right thing requires us to step out of our comfort zone and to be and do things that we normally would not be or do. And let me tell you, the hardest thing you will ever do is to tell your friends that you disagree with them on certain things. You know, this discussion about, you know, talking about, you know, the era of Jim Crow, I've studied this stuff, folks. I really have studied this stuff. You know, not because, you know, the fact that I went to college or not the fact that, you know, you know, that, you know, that I got it in regular school, which I did. You know, we talked about, you know, what racism really was, you know, what is, you know, what does it mean? You know, why did we have Jim Crow laws? You know, what about the bottom rung theory? You know, folks, you know, a lot of folks just want to bury the past and don't want to talk about it. Well, imagine if we said, let's bury the past, let's don't talk about, you know, the Holocaust. You know, the Holocaust, let me tell you something. We have an entire Holocaust museum in Washington, D.C. I've been through it more than once. I've taken my family through it, you know, because I wanted my kids to be educated in what happens when good people fail to do the right thing. And a lot of really innocent, beautiful, wonderful lives were lost. Who knows? The person that could have cured cancer may have died in one of those concentration camps. Who knows? We don't know. But I'll tell you this. Over 6 million people were murdered. That's a fact. Now, there are some groups out there that say, hey, we don't want to talk about that. Let's not talk about that. Talk about that. That's just such a horrible thing. It's a, you know, it's gonna bring up bad memories. Well, I got news for you. We need to talk about it. The same way we need to talk about why were lynchings of black Americans seen as, okay, well, it just happens. You know, it was nothing to joke about, especially if you're on the receiving end of that lynching, okay? And for those of you that don't know what a lynching is, it's a beating and a scourging, and it is eventually a hanging or, you know, crucifixion of somebody. That's exactly what a lynching is. It's not just, you know, we take a belt and whip your hind in a couple of times. No, it's you beat them to death. That's what a lynching is. And in America, it was seen as, you know, just the way that it was. Well, it shouldn't be that way. Critical race theory. Let's just talk about that a little bit. What is critical race theory? Critical race theory. And I'm going to pull this off of Wikipedia. Is a theoretical framework or set of perspectives by which structural and institutional racism may be examined, okay? It developed as an academic movement of civil rights scholars and activists of the United States who sought to critically examine U.S. law. I love it how people say, we don't have a problem. We don't have a problem. Dude, it wasn't that long ago that we had black and white restrooms. So let's not even go there, okay? And people want us to just forget about it. Let's forget about it. Okay, let's forget about the Holocaust. Let's forget about the Trail of Tears. You know, let's forget about moving the people that actually owned this country when we came here, and we moved them and shifted them all over into these reservations, into some of the worst, horrific land. And then when they improved it and made it well, they were like, let's move you again. Okay, that kind of stuff really happened. People starved to death. They got smallpox. They died. There were laws that were created that said that they were two-thirds human being in some cases. Let me tell you, a human being is a human being, regardless of their race, religion, creed, whatever. They're a human being, and we need to recognize human rights. You know, CRT, which is critical race theory, originated in the mid-70s. It's been around for a long time. You know, several American scholars have written about it. I can give you a whole list of them, you know. It emerged as a movement in the 1980s, reworking theories of critical legal studies with more focus on race. CRT is grounded in critical theory and draws from thinkers, people that think. You know, we have to study, you know, Frederick Douglass, you know, Sojourner Truth, Antonio Gramsci, you know, the Black Power movement, the Chicano movement, the radical feminist movement of the 1960s and the 1970s. We need to understand it. We need to study that. In my opinion, we do. We shouldn't make ourselves ignorant. You know, ignorance and stupidity are two different things. You know, ignorance, and Rich, I got you on the line now, but ignorance, Kate, ourselves through ignorance. But there are academic critics also of CRT argue that it relies on social constructionism. It elevates storytelling over evidence, rejects the concepts of truth and merit, and opposes liberalism. You know, and since 2020, here recently, okay, conservative lawmakers in the United States have sought to ban or restrict critical race theory. Look, go back. It's been around long before some of these, you know, conservatives, you know, quote unquote, were even born. Okay? They want to ban it. They want to stop it. They say that it's going to open up old wounds. You know, critics of these efforts say that lawmakers have poorly defined or misrepresented the tenets and the importance of CRT, you know, and that the goal of the laws is to silence broader discussions of racism, equality, social justice. Look, we need to be talking about all levels of racism, all levels of it. You know, I can tell you that everybody and every race has been discriminated against. It's happened. So we're going to talk about that as well. And we're going to get into a discussion with Rich about this as well. But if you read, what we're also going to talk about is the definition of liberal and conservative. And obviously, you know, my definition of what a liberal and a conservative is, I was a registered Republican from the age of 18 until I was 48 years old. So, yes, I understand. I have been on that side of the fence. Okay, things changed for me, and I've decided to not be associated with either party. However, as I watch this whole thing transform, you know, I'm really looking at considering, you know, changing and affiliating with the Democrat Party. And why would I do that? Well, because my grandmother was an FDR Democrat. My grandfather, okay, was an Eisenhower Republican. They were real representatives of a movement that didn't just trash each other. Sure, they had their discussions and they had their differences, but not like today. And the reason why is because there were elements civility. There were elements of, you know, working together for the greater good. That's what I mean when I say we need to work together. Not we need to compromise. No, don't ever compromise your stance. Don't ever compromise your integrity. Don't ever do that. But we should be able, for the greater good, and those that can't need to be voted out. And that's on both sides. If you can't work for the greater good, if you can't see that education of our youth should include the truth about systemic racism that people say doesn't exist now, okay, great. I'm not an African American. I don't know that. I can't speak on that. But I can tell you for darn sure that in the 1960s and the 1970s, it damn sure did exist, because people absolutely were not allowed to be in certain places at certain times. It wasn't that long ago there was a town in Alabama that recently took down the signs. And I'm talking about back in the early 1990s when they had signs that basically used a racial term and told them not to be caught in their town at sundown. Okay, that really happened. And that happened in a time when it shouldn't have happened. You know, so yes, it exists. Yes, there is a level of bigotry, and a lot of people have it. So anyways, what do you think, Rich? We had our song, we had our monologue.
First of all, I have a new phone. How do I sound?
Let me see. You sound pretty good to me. I mean, I've got my
headphones.
Before,
you know, if I held this thing a little away from my mouth, you guys had a hard time hearing me, okay?
Sure, yeah.
So, anyway, I'm doing good. Typical.
There we go.
The first issue, let's get right to the point. First of all, I'll tell you, you're really ambitious tonight. You think we're going to actually get to talk about the definition of liberalism and conservative? I'm
sure.
Worried we won't have time to talk about the Trail of Tears, okay? So, first issue, critical race theory. You tap danced around that subject like the South tap dances around what the Civil War was all about, okay? You know, when I teach that issue and I stood up in front of the captains and I would, what was the Civil War all about? And of course, there's someone's going to go, you know, state rights.
It was about rights.
What are they fighting for? The right to have slaves, okay? Fundamental issue was slavery, but everybody's tap dancing around it, and. You came close to describing critical race theory, but you quickly shifted to what the current narrative is,
mm-hmm.
liberals. That's why you want to discuss the definition of liberals, because, you know, you got to pick a term, people who are promoting this, all right? And that is... it's come under fire. It's come under serious criticism. And so the proponents for teaching critical race theory in the public schools, not universities. Universities are for debate, not the public schools. Okay, that's mm-hmm. the problem. You teach something like critical race theory in public schools, that's propaganda. All right. So I'm just
really
going to throw that out. But the issue is they've been redefining it just like you did, where you're saying, mm-hmm. so we're going to ignore the Holocaust didn't exist. We're going to ignore slavery doesn't exist. No, those are historical facts, and we mm-hmm. teach those. Do you ever experience slavery in your life, James? Did you ever see a slave? So how do you know slavery even exists in this country?
Time out. Hold on a second. In this country, I have not. But in third world countries, yes.
All right, I know. I figured you might say that. Yes. You and me, we've been around the world. Yes, slavery still exists. And you have already admitted slavery, human trafficking, slavery still exists in this country.
Terrible.
Right.
Yeah.
And it isn't whites that are the product of that human trafficking. Color that are buying that. Okay, so anyway, so how do you know slavery existed in this country? When did you first find out about slavery in America?
Well, probably when I was in the fourth grade and we did a study on the Civil War.
So you learned about it in public school, just like
I did.
We all did. Nobody's hiding that fact. It was a fact. And like you said, you could ignore it. Look, I learned about, the issue of slavery. I remember the debate over the Constitution.
Sure,
and the way it was written, they couldn't abolish, you know, here it is, all people are created equal. They couldn't get the South this thing if they abolished slavery. That was a key issue. Okay? So, yes, slavery is inherent in our history. No one's ignoring that. But that has become the current narrative of critical race theory. And I want to point this out. Critical race theory is a theory. It's an interpretation of the facts. No one is trying to deny these facts didn't exist. Yes, we need to teach this. I hope we have time to talk about the Trail of Tears, because I said, you know, because the reason I brought that up as a subject is because I've seen a lot of on social media, you know, there are people said, yeah, we need to teach the Trail of Tears in school. And I'm from Oklahoma. I sure did. That's where I heard about the Trail of Tears. But here's the thing.
Yeah. Now I learned about it too.
You examine back to the Trail of Tears. The narrative you're trying, the reason you want to teach the Trail of Tears, that narrative falls apart, okay? If you want to talk about the oppression of Native Americans, you might want to talk about Sand Creek Massacre. Or there's a movie coming out. I drove through Husk, Oklahoma when I was coming. Well, actually, I drove through there, the Osage County when I was going home. Drove, and I saw they were filming. When I drove back, my daughter was with me, and she had never been on a movie set before. So we stopped. They were filming the movie, Night Terror, I'm trying to remember the actor, but it's about the killing of Osage Indians to get their oil rights.
Sure.
Based on the book, Killers of the Flower Moon, which is a great book. It's a bestseller, great book. Read it, and you know you can interpret this in many ways. You know, you can interpret it as white man, you know, the oppressor, but you can think like greed is evil, and there's a greedy people, and there was, and the way the laws were written, that there was a few people who were taking advantage of it. And the Reign of Terror was killing of Osage to get their mineral rights. So anyway, that's all history. That's all history. But the critical race theory is a theory. It's an interpretation of the fact. And it was not written, developed by historians. Was developed by lawyers to interpret the law.
Yeah. So here's what I'm grabbing out of this, okay? So it is actually a discussion about not just the slavery, not just the Trail of Tears, but about the laws that were created even after slavery was abolished that did, minimalize, these individuals based on their race. You know, we're talking about the voting rights, you know, we're talking about, you know, the ability to walk on the same side of the street as white folks. I'm telling you, you know that went on. You probably remember some of it, you know.
I grew up, James, I'm older than you. I grew up. I got to admit this. Okay. I come from the Cherokee Strip. And was to have segregation, you got to have some kind of money, right? One of the things I'm going to tell you this: concepts of the critical race theory is that race is not racism, or race is not biological,
mm-hmm.
but it is social. And I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of truth to that, okay? Town I grew up in, Newkirk, Oklahoma, was so damn poor, we couldn't afford segregation.
Right, yeah, well.
We had one elementary school, and we had one high school, and everybody
sure.
went to it. And then when I moved to Ponca City, it still didn't have segregation. There were small forms of segregation, like minorities mm-hmm. tended to live in certain communities.
Sure.
And now across the border in Kansas, yes,
mm-hmm.
they had a separate pool. They had a separate
mm-hmm. yeah.
swimming pool. Newkirk, we didn't have a public swimming pool. Okay, and they had, I think, a separate schools. Okay,
mm-hmm.
they had segregation in our Kansas City, Kansas. But where I lived in Oklahoma, in both towns, Newkirk and Ponca City, yeah. segregation on that level. So I didn't get experienced it in that form, but I knew about it in other towns, like my uncle, you know, in a small town of Eufaula, Oklahoma. They were segregated.
Mm-hmm.
And he was colorblind. He moved in that, took over that town as football, and he knew if he wanted to win, he had to get those plates. And here's the interesting thing about it, is in the segregation, there was that if, like, for example, you had the black school had a great, their athletic program had a great basketball program, but not football. And the white school had a great football program, but there was no black athletes. And the Jim Crow law allowed that, If one school offered a program the other didn't, that from the other school could attend that. He took advantage of that. He went over and started recruiting. And here was that you would think when you watch these movies about recruiting black. I saw one that seemed to be fairly accurate, and it was. Basketball. It was a university coach. He had to go into the homes. And that's what my uncle talked about. He said, he had to go into the homes. It wasn't like going over and saying, hey, you want to come over and play football with us? Like in a white school, you know.
Well, let me ask you a question,
though.
There's
some bad things can happen. And he had to go into the homes and sit down with the families and promise he would protect. You want to know who some of the first black football players he recruited was? The Selman brothers. Now, I'm not big into football, but the Selman – now, these were the younger Selman brothers. He became – they hell, those two boys were like the whole front line, and I think they were the defensive line, and they became a few defensive line, and one – NFL All-American and Hall of Fame, and then the other one I think he went to in league, and he produced some tremendous athletes, you know. But yeah,
I
that time frame. Okay,
I want to read this. Yeah. I want to read this. Critical race theory emphasizes.
Go ahead.
And it emphasizes how racism and disparate racial outcomes can be the result of complex, changing, and often subtle social and institutional dynamics rather than explicit and intentional prejudice by individuals. See, this is why the current voting law is very important to a lot of people, and they're Democrats and Republicans alike. If we did a study here in West Virginia, and I'm telling you, 78% of the people in our state wanted that H.R. 1 to pass. They did. 78%, Republicans and Democrats. And, whenever it didn't pass, you know, because it was essentially on party lines, you know, it has the appearance that one party is trying to maintain a certain level of acceptance of what many would say is would be associated with systematic racism when it comes to voting. So I want to finish this. It also reviews race.
Let me address that.
Yeah, hold on real quick.
And another poll says 80% of Americans want voter ID. 80%
I don't think anybody cares about
some kind of proof that the person who is casting a vote is the person they claim to be.
Yeah, nobody, you know, look, I'm going to tell you.
No, there's 20% of the people who, I'll tell you what, you want to know who doesn't want voter ID? All those dead people that are voting Democrat.
Well, let me tell you, we just cleaned the records here in West Virginia, and we cleaned off a lot more dead Republicans than we did dead Democrats.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you, that's just the God's honest truth.
Then you're in agreement. We need voter ID. Any law that has voter ID, we're in agreement on it. Okay.
Yeah, but listen to me on this, okay? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but your driver's license should be sufficient. Your voting card that you get, if they really want to make this right, then that voting card, you know, by them saying that they won't accept a non-picture voting card, they are essentially saying, you know, that they made a mistake in the first place by issuing the card. So I think that they need to take the picture. You know, we go in, they match our signatures. I show them my driver's license.
Right.
I show them my voter ID card. I don't care to do that. That doesn't bother me. And I don't think it bothers 99% of Americans that are voting. But there is a group that likes to say they don't want anybody to show ID. No, that's not it. They don't want anybody to say you got to show this ID that you can only get from this place. Or
I have not heard this. Virginia has voter ID, had a voter ID law until our governor canceled that. It wasn't a matter of what kind of ID you showed.
You're starting to break up.
Showing ID to prove who you are. Okay.
Yeah. Listen, you got to get into the finite details. This is exactly why we should be teaching critical race theory, because it emphasizes.
You're saying we need to teach a theory in public schools.
Rich,
right?
You're breaking up, man. I can barely hear you. You're breaking up.
All right. So you're saying we need to teach a theory in public school.
I'm saying that we need to teach a fact, but critical race theory
that's
emphasizes.
Called history.
I know.
James,
I got that.
That's called history.
Listen to me.
That's called history.
You're not letting me finish. That I want to finish this. It's only two paragraphs.
Okay,
I promise you, it's not gonna kill us. So it emphasizes how racism. So listen to this. It can be the result of complex, changing, and often subtle social and institutional dynamics. I watched an entire study on home ownership of Black Americans and White Americans, and you realize that more white Americans own their home because they have, you know, a certain level of education about finances, credit scores, and things like that that are not taught. Now, why are we getting that education and other people are not getting that education? Is that because of, the standards, or is that because of the way people are viewed? Nobody knows that. So we need to study this critical race theory. In my opinion, we need to study it because we need to find out why things like that occur. You can't tell me, you and I both serve with some wonderful, you know, people of color, and you know, you're married to a lovely lady, you know, and you know, no one can say that you're prejudiced or racist. You grew up around, you know, Native Americans and you know, just like we've been educated and we've seen things, but not everyone has had that opportunity. And I think that if we push this and we don't try to understand it, then I think that we're really getting ourselves into an issue. So it also views race as a socially constructed identity, which serves to oppress non-white people in the field of legal studies. You know, CRT emphasizes, this is where the lawyers come in, that merely making laws colorblind on paper may not be enough to make the application of the laws colorblind. Ostensibly, colorblind laws can be applied in racially discriminatory ways. You know, and when you look at intersectionality, which emphasizes that race can intersect with other identities such as gender and class to produce complex combinations of power and disadvantages. So we're not just talking about the disadvantages, but we're talking about the power. So it's like, you know, some laws have been created, okay, because, you know, the pendulum swings. We made a lot of mistakes. So let's swing the pendulum over this way a little bit too far. And then, you know, you have another race of people that feel like they're being discriminated against. You know, I just think that people are seeing this as only a black and white thing, and it is not. It is a very complex, it's about all races, because we have all experienced some form of discrimination, you know, whether it be based on your race. In this case, we're talking about our race. In my case, you know, I was short. So, you know, I had a physical, you know, I was born short.
You are not just short, but you're also from West Virginia.
Yeah, and I'm from West Virginia, one leg shorter than the other, you know, and it's like from standing on the side of the hill.
Because I'm from Oklahoma. Look, if you want to make someone the ultimate hit in a movie, he's from Oklahoma.
Yeah, well, but you know, and so here's why I want to look at this, you know. I want to look at the criticisms of this. The criticism.
All right. Let me address it because you may move on to something else before I get. All right. I want to address.
Let's do it.
What you're talking about, especially the subtlety of the hidden subtlety of racism in the laws, and you picked a really good one, which was homeowner. Yes, there is discrimination in home ownership. Yes, it needs to be studied. Does that need to be taught in the public schools?
In my opinion, if we teach it, then we may prevent future people from.
All right. See, I agree. That's where we need to teach critical thinking.
Right.
So you want to teach kids in public schools that our country is racist?
No. I want to teach kids.
So what do you want to teach?
No, I want to teach. No, because I don't think that everybody's racist. I don't. What I want to teach is critical race thinking instead of theory.
Ah,
critical
that's different.
Race thinking.
That's different.
Now,
actually, I don't even like that term. Okay.
Well, we got to think. And here's the problem.
Okay, we call critical thinking, analytical thinking.
Yes.
That's good. But we don't teach history in the public schools to teach critical thinking. We teach that at the college level. In my history class in the lieutenant course, called critical thinking. It was not called history. It's called critical thinking. But that is at the college level where we teach people how to think, how to analyze.
Well, I can tell you, James McCormick's house.
At the public school level, to teach them the facts the current.
We teach it to our kids
because of the backlash. See, basically, you read it. Critical race theory is, as I said, is. Advocated a theory advocated by a number of lawyers that our laws are institutionally racist, is white suppressing the black. Okay, and it's a theory. It is not it's not completely founded in history, and there's examples about it. But it is something we need to study at the college level. What we teach at the, in the public schools, or what are the facts? The mind. Seriously.
Well, then that's the problem. The facts
when
are not
I,
even being
when I went to school, I just want to tell you something. When I was in school and we learned about when we got to D-Day, that was a major event. When I went back to each high school and we got to the section on World War II, D-Day was nearly teaching the German fortifications. I mean, I learned about D-Day in high school. I could walk up and talk to someone who was there, a conversation about it, because I knew what happened or not. But by the time I was teaching it, so much of it, look, you know, the Vietnam War was going on when I was in high school. And you know, you think how much history has passed since then, the amount, you know, but they have they increased the length of history school? No. So you keep cramming all this extra stuff in there. D-Day went from probably a full day, dedicated day class, to a bare mention during World War II.
Let me focus.
Look, we just want
to arm kids going to school right now.
Knowledge so when they get to college, they can understand the facts.
Well, let me say this, okay? It's a farce. It is a farce that kids don't have time to learn anything else. That is a farce, and I can tell you, because during the pandemic, okay, during the pandemic, the one thing that I got to see is I got to see my kids working in school or, you know, in our home, and they would finish their entire week worth of studies in 3 days. Now, they're smart kids. They're really smart kids.
No. So, hey, James, I'm going to add to that. Okay, because when I was when I moved back to Ponca City and I looked at teaching high school, every teacher starts out as a sub. You move, and I got assigned to detention because of my military background, I could handle the troublemakers. Being detention,
sure.
So there was no teaching. You just assigned the kids their work. Seriously, they were knocking out an hour-long class in 15 to 20 minutes.
That's exactly right.
In my Aikido, some of my students homeschool, and they're talking about they finish a full day's worth of class at 3 hours. Okay, if they just focus on the work, they can knock it all out in a short period of time. And here's what I learned teaching is we're distracted by all these troublemakers. Homa, the classes were no larger than 23 people, and there were three kids didn't need to be in that class. And if I could get rid of them, I could talk. I could actually teach. But we spend most of our time with those three students. Okay, they're pulling everybody else down. But anyway,
Well, maybe that was some of the case.
So we're back to critical race theory. Remember, it is a theory. And if you're going to propose, if you're going to teach one, you have to, and you want to teach critical, if you just teach one theory by itself, that's propaganda.
Well, not necessarily, because if you really study.
Okay, prove me wrong.
Okay, if you really study the full, you know, intent of this, it isn't just about, you know, the whites, you know, are all the bad people here. You know, I'm not seeing that at all. I'm actually seeing an entire focus on all forms of race. You know, we're not just
wrong. I'm reading it right now.
I got it right here.
The study of critical race theory, it's about whiteness as it is the white race that is the racist. Actually, hold it. No. Today you have to get into the definition of racism.
Well,
and
I mean, affirmative action and why it didn't work.
It is a social structure that happens to, it was not biological, but it's social. I'm going to agree it.
Yeah, you're breaking
anyway,
up, Rich.
Go ahead, continue. What were you going to say?
So, you know, so basically, you know, the critical race theorists, you know, they paid particular attention to like affirmative action, you know. You know, whereby scholars have argued in favor of such an argument, then so-called merit standards for hiring and educational admissions are not race neutral. See, they are showing that even, yes, they've made mistakes to try to worry to death that it's all going to just be about black. And let's just cut to the chase, Rich. I mean, most of these people are that are really opposing this, they are just, some of them are just bigots. They're just bigots. They just don't want to hear anything about
it. Wait, I'm opposed. Tell me I'm ignorant.
No, I said bigots.
Bigot. Am I a bigot?
No. Well,
I'm opposed to teaching theory in the public schools. I'm not opposed to teaching about racism and slavery and all that. I'm not opposed to teaching history. I'm opposed to teaching a theory.
Right. Well,
here's the thing you mentioned, James.
You're breaking up really bad, Rich.
That must be the connection because I'm really talking right into the microphone.
Yeah.
Have
you moved any place?
If you could reduce critical race theory to one sentence, what would it be?
To one sentence? Critical race theory is well, it was actually when I first, you know, was talking about it. You know, it's the study.
No, reduce it to one sentence.
Well, let me try to reduce it.
Whites are inherently racist, and they create laws to suppress people.
Yeah. Well, what it examines social, cultural, and legal issues as they relate to race and racism in the United States and elsewhere in the world. That's exactly what critical race theory is. You knock it down to one sentence, is it examines, okay? So understand, it's examining social, cultural. Look, we took sociology class.
Yeah, okay.
In high school. When I took sociology class and we started, you know, studying, you know, about different communities, I'm trying to think of the proper terminology, but anyway, social groups. You know, there was a lot of theory or a lot of, you know, that was into that. Not all of it was factual. Some of it was just a perception. You know, what's the perception? We taught, you know, here's what I'm saying. It's not about just teaching how one race is oppressing other, and that's the biggest fear, and that's the most, that is wrong. If you really look at the full dynamics of what they are teaching, they even talk about affirmative action and why that it did not succeed. I mean, okay, they talk about, you know, they talk about different, you know, why are blacks so mad? Why are white people so mad? I mean, you heard the general talk about that. You know, I want to study white rage. You know, what made people want to, you know, assault the Capitol? Condemned him for saying that. Why? Why would that be a condemning thing to say? Why would we not want to study? You know, hell, I went through, you know, just like, you know, I went through the course at NTC and I became, you know, very, very educated in Soviet-styled warfare. I did. In the 1990s, I went through the entire course, got a great, nice certificate, learned how to be the op four, learned how to think like a Russian. But that doesn't make me a communist or a Russian or anything like that. It just meant that I really studied, you know, what I may be facing. The same thing with our kids. Our kids are going to face this when they leave school. What is school designed to do? It's designed to prepare them for adulthood. That's why I believe that critical race theory is okay to teach in public school.
All right. So, tell me what you want. How old are your kids? Just for the audience understand. How old are you?
Well,
what grade are your kids in?
The ones that are with us now. So we have a one in the sixth grade, and you know, he's getting ready to go in the seventh grade, and then one that's getting ready to go into the fifth grade. So,
okay.
But
tell
of course,
me what got, you want that teacher to teach him about race.
Well, I don't want them to lie to them and to tell them, you know.
No. I didn't ask you what you about lying. I asked you what you want your public school teacher to teach your kids about race in American history. And I asked that because I want to see if that matches with if that's history or critical race.
Well,
all right,
well,
that's why I'm asking. It is a loaded question. So I'm asking,
I know.
What do you want your children to learn about race in America history?
What I want them to understand, what I want them taught, is I want to taught them to be taught about the facts, about we teach them how laws are created, right? We teach them how comes a law, then it's signed, you know. I mean, we've all seen, you know, the cartoon that shows
you. I mean, that,
but
I think that was called a class on civics.
You're breaking up really bad.
From
you're breaking
school.
Up really bad, man.
Oh, okay. No, I was saying that
I
used
can't
to be
hear
a
you,
class that was taught in public schools that has been dropped. It was called civics. Okay, James is calling back on. We just lost connection. Anyway, all right. When I talk, what I'm really trying to get drag out of James is, see, you present a theory to be balanced, to be able to teach critical theory.
Okay, there I got
you
it.
You have to teach the other side. You have to teach the opposing. And let me, because I'd really like
can
to
hear me okay?
Tears. Yeah, no, you're coming in.
Okay.
You're coming in good, okay?
Licking chicken, loud and clear.
Here's what I'm getting at, because what I've heard from you and what I'm hearing from the left, the liberals, or whatever name you want to give them, the defenders of critical race theory, they are not defending critical race theory. They're redefining it. And they're saying, we don't want to teach the facts. We don't want to teach history. No.
That's not true.
No.
That's
no.
not true. That's
I
not
know.
True.
That's absolutely correct, because we learn history in school. Most people don't know their history, but yes, no, we're not trying to cover this up.
Right.
No, what we're not wanting to teach is a theory. Here's a theory I presented when I was teaching in the transportation school. I would teach about why we study history. And
now, did you want me to say what I wanted
minority.
My kids to learn? Did you want me to? Because we got
yeah,
cut
go
off.
Ahead,
do you
go
want
ahead.
Me?
Since you're back on, go ahead and finish that.
Yeah. So what I want my children to be taught is I want them to be able to be taught how these laws are created both ways, you know. And when you talk about critical race theory and you start talking about all sides of it, believe me, I'm reading the definition of it. The definition, the instructional framework for these classes includes all sides. It's not just one side. So that is a false narrative that people have put on this, because I want my kids to understand, because I want them to be critical thinkers. Listen, if we taught our kids to be critical thinkers, they might not be so inclined to become drug addicts, pregnant before they get out of high school. I want them to learn to think. I want them to learn to not just be afraid of a kid who walks into their class, because we, you know, we don't have a large African-American population here. So I don't want my kids to be sitting in class and all of a sudden, you know, an African-American or Hispanic or whatever child comes in to the class. I don't want them to automatically have a fear of them. I want them to use their mind and to be able to think of them as individuals. Now, do the teachers have that responsibility to teach all that? No, they don't. That should be taught at home. You know, a lot of that should be taught at home. However, because of the dynamics of households now, We cannot depend on all homes are not created equal. You know that. Some of them teach a very obscene, I mean, you said it yourself. When you were a teacher, you were occupied with three or four students because they were jackassing around, you know, in class, and it was hard to get the study out because of them. I would challenge if we taught them something like critical thinking, critical race theory, whatever you want to call it, I believe that they would eventually morph into a better human being. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, here's my turn. All right.
Gotcha.
Critical race theory is based on the idea that whites are racist, and all the laws that come out are basically to suppress people
of
color.
Yeah, but see, Rich, there's
even
no...
Even though the law is not specific about it, it's subtle about it. For example, the Constitution. Frederick Douglass, who you cited, admitted, let me read it, Frederick Douglass talking about the Constitution, and he said that if the Constitution were intended to be, by its framers and adopters, a slave-holding instrument, then why would neither slavery, slave-holding, nor slave be anywhere found in it? Yet, that is not the focus of those who challenge the integrity of the Constitution. So the critical race theory says, but it's hidden in there. It can be interpreted. Now, I'm going to tell you, because I was about to talk about it, that when I teach history, and one of the things I talk about is, you know, why are we interested in history? What do we get out of it? And I said, you know, how about our identity? You know, like your African-American. Would you like to know about the history of African-Americans in the Army? And, of course, the hands go, the heads are not. And so I spend an hour on that, and I teach it. And I said, here's the thing. Okay, so when you this is my theory, all right, which is entirely the opposite of critical race theory. See, we brought a lot of baggage over with us from Europe. And, I found in my research something like seven tenets of critical race theory. It's interesting. And it, let me see, what is it? Yeah, legal advances of color tend to serve the interests of the dominant white groups and constant reminding race negative stereotypes. Essentially, that whites are constantly trying to suppress the colored people of color. But when I look at history, when I look at American history, what I saw was, and this is the criticism historians have with the critical race theory, is it doesn't match up with facts. So you're saying all whites? No. I was surprised. Okay, I thought that the New England, all right, Virginia, you nailed it. Virginia is transplanted British aristocracy, which is racism, okay? In England, there was an aristocracy established, and that you were born into a couple. And that's one thing I agreed with on the critical race theory, is that racism is socially, it's not biological, but it's social. You were put into a class. You know, just because you are born of color doesn't make you inferior. It is because of your social status within the hierarchy. That is part a product of the Norman conquest, where they, and you look at serfdom. You know, slavery existed throughout, you know, the Norman domination of England until, I think, 50 or something like that, in which serfs were property. They belonged to the landlord, okay? If you want to know, because I descend from Scotch and Irish, and now I've done 23andMe. I hate to admit I got a lot of English blood. God, I hate to admit that, damn it. But anyway, you know, when you look at the Scottish and Irish, why they were so content with living in poverty rather than subjugate them to English rule, because they were free. They preferred poverty to freedom. But anyway, okay. So the theme is, when you look at the settlement of Virginia, and most of the South came out of Virginia. There were certain ports of entry, you know, and so came to Virginia were transplanted aristocracy looking to get rich. They're taking that same concept of a hierarchical structure that you are born into this class, that into the South. But in the North, you had people who were coming here to escape persecution. That religion was very dominant in their lives. Now, what surprised me in my research for this show, that the Puritans and the Quakers owned slaves for quite a while before they decided that was wrong. And the conflict they had was, they were slaves. We're not talking indentured servants, okay, because I descend from an indentured servant, someone who had to pay 7 years of his life to cover the passage that someone paid to bring him over here, okay? But we're talking about African-American slaves. Yeah, they were owners of them, okay? But dominated by religion, and they had this conflict. Not everybody were owned slaves. And in that, there's this conflict that, you know, according to the Bible, when it talks about slaves, is obey your masters. But again, it talks about masters treat your slaves as if they're members of the household. It addressed, because at the time that the scriptures were written, slavery was just a common status. Slavery is inherent in every culture. All right. And so they're saying, you know, it's a status. Slavery is the lowest status of economical hierarchy, all right? So, but it describes how masters are supposed to treat their slaves. And so we have, according to the Bible, we have this inherent conflict till finally the Puritans and Quakers wake up and realize, you know what? Wow, this makes me rich. It's still wrong. And so they decide to abolish it. And that's the beginning of the abolition movement in America. And while actually what's interesting is the 1688 move, there was a proposal to abolish slavery among the Quakers in 1688, and they tend to take credit for it. The fact was that the Quaker leadership said, now's not a good time to do that. But so it begins in Virginia. Here's my theory. Except for Virginia, which end up, you know, migrating to the southern colonies, the majority of Americans, especially take those Scotch and Irish, my Scotch and Irish ancestors, they were coming here to escape this aristocracy. Coming here, the idea that they were inherently equal to all men, that it didn't matter what your father's name was, you had an equal shot at greatness. And Thomas Paine was, I mean, if you want to talk about, you know, the inspiration of the American Revolution and equality, there is Thomas Paine. You know, he is the inspiration for the American Revolution, then goes over to France, you know, and is a proponent for their revolution, too. But the thing, so my theory is, which is the opposite of critical race theory. The critical race theory is based on the fact that, whites are racist, and everything they
do, Rich, you said that twice, and it doesn't matter how many times you say it, it's wrong
all right, what you're saying.
Let me get to what the opposite theory is.
The opposite theory is that that people came to this country. The thing is, we came here to create a land of equality. And if you are not born, if you were not born white, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant, you had to struggle in this country. My Irish ancestors, okay, they were one step above slaves. And the Scots were one step above them, all right? That's how they were viewed by the English. In fact, if you look at the Pennsylvania settlement, you know, the great experiment, which is, see, every state in the pretty much had a state religion. But Pennsylvania, when William Penn came in, he's like, no, you know, we should be able to allow all religions to come here. So that's why you have Irish Catholics coming in and Scottish Presbyterians coming in there. And, well, the thing is, Quakers are pacifists, and they need these warlike Scots and Irish to deal with the Indian frontier. Okay, that's coming in there. But it was this great experiment. And the thing is, that to me is the true America. And if you look at it from the beginning to where we are, it's progress. So why didn't we write slavery into the Constitution? Because we inherently knew it was wrong. We didn't want to include those words in it.
Right.
We inherently, the founders inherently knew it was wrong.
And they did, but most of them had ideals that
we are trying to achieve. And every minority that comes in here has a struggle. The Irish overcome it. The Scots overcame it. The Italian, you know, I always joke, like with Pacella, you know, I always like to joke with him. I said, you know, when the Italians came to America, the Irish were like, thank God we got somebody to look down upon, okay? Because we were tired of being picked on. And so now we have the Arabs. The Arabs are coming here. They're the new Eastern Europeans, all right? So, yeah, okay, we're inherently racist. Everybody is. All right, and we can get into that inherently. Why is racism so big in this country? Because it's a melting pot.
Well, and a lot of that comes from.
Do you think Japan has a problem with racism? Yeah. No, because they don't allow other races in there. Do you think China has a problem with racism? No, they eliminate it. Okay. America is a melting pot, and we have a lot of growing pains.
Right.
That's another theory to look at.
Mm-hmm.
See, you want your kids taught that whites are inherently racist and they do everything they can to suppress people of color? Or do you want your kids taught that we had a lot of growing pains, that this is a melting pot country that was taking people from all over the world.
As soon as you get done talking, I'll tell you about something that was brought over, you know, from the old country. As soon as you get done, I want to tell you about some inherent racist, and blood feuds that were brought from the former Yugoslavian Republic to a small, you know, when I worked for Tyson Foods
before I went back into the Army. That, James, we'll never get to talk about the Trail of Tears.
Here's what I want to say. I want to clearly articulate this, that critical race theory does not, that whites are racist. That does not teach.
Bullshit. Go and read it again. This came out of the Ivy League school, James. Pull it up and read it. That white are inherently racist.
Rich, pull it up and read it. Because I read you the definition.
James, I spent all day studying, reading
Rich,
everything on critical race theory.
Here, hold on a second. Let me pull it up. Let me pull it up again because it seems like it's fell on deaf ears.
Get up.
Are you ready?
I read many theories on this, but it was the Harvard one that was very explicit. Just like the South tap dance around slavery is the reason they went to war, the Civil War.
The more you tap dance around
white supremacism, but the Harvard one didn't.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, it's the truth. It's the truth, man. I mean, I'm telling you.
What's the truth?
That you had deep-rooted racism in America. I mean, you do. I mean, you can't. Nobody can deny that.
Wait. What? And I just described to you there is racism in America.
Sure, we agree with that.
The people who came here had an inherent, whether they believed it. Look, everybody's racist, James. Everybody's
critical
racist.
Critical race
okay,
theory
we talked
is a
about
theoretical
it tribalism.
Framework. Listen, I want to.
Let's talk about. We have
because
it's
this
not
is
just
exactly
by skin color, whatever. It's about
Rich,
your identity, cultural,
I'm,
ethnic
I'm being
identity.
Very patient. I'm being very patient. But
okay,
this is exactly why that nobody can have a damn conversation about this, because it's like this is the agenda that is pushed, that that we don't want to teach it because all it teaches is that white people are racist against black people. And if they just listen, education is a beautiful thing. It really is. You know, you're an educated man. We're educated people. But go get the definition, the real definition. And I'm not talking about some scholar's definition from one particular school that we have to go dig. Just look at the Webster's definition of it, okay, which is theoretical, which is a theory, framework, or set of perspectives by which structural and institutional racism may be examined, period. That's it. Not blacks hating whites, whites hating blacks. It doesn't mention a damn thing about any particular race. And if our history plays out that you know, because look, when we're going to talk about the Trail of Tears, you know, that was a lot of white people that did that, okay? That's fact, you know. That's just the way that it was, that pushed these folks, you know, into this reservation system that just, you know, killed. You know the story about it. It's an examination. Listen to me.
Yes. But,
it is
okay.
Structural and
right.
Institutional
racism. And I really want to talk about that. Yes. That's different.
That's critical race theory. That is exactly what.
No, it isn't. James.
Yes, it is. It's right here. I'm looking at it.
Okay, tell me. All right. So tell me. That's a good segue. So tell me how the Trail of Tears proves the critical race theory.
Because it was institutional racism. There was a level of racism that was approved by our government. It was approved.
Okay,
to move
that's
them
really good.
Off.
I'm glad you brought that up. So let's talk about the Trail of Tears. That is a good case study on critical race theory.
Perfect.
So start. Why should we teach the Trail of Tears in books, which I am a proponent of?
Yeah, well, we should teach it because of the same reason why we should teach, you know, any kind of systematic or institutionalized racism that was accepted practice. Here's the reason why we teach people about the Trail of Tears. We teach people this so they can see the signs of what brought this on, okay? What brought this tragedy on? Ultimately, it was a fear and a greed, mainly greed. That is what I believe force this on the Native American Indians, okay, that were forced to move.
Would you repeat that? I'm having trouble. You said it was formed. I heard greed. That doesn't make sense.
No. Greed.
Greed. Okay, you're right. Greed. Okay.
Yeah. I think greed.
Okay. My hearing. I'm getting
greed,
old. Hearing.
Greed. Yeah,
greed,
we all
you're
are.
You're absolutely right. I'm going to agree on that.
So it was greed and it was institutionalized racism, okay, because the government, they used the army to move these guys. You know, come on, man. How much more institutionalized do you get? It's accepted. It is actually a law. You know, they had, you know, tribal relations and Indian officers and everything else, you know, that rode around these reservations. And it wasn't that long ago. We still have reservations now. You've been on reservations. You know what it's like. it's heartbreaking, some of the reservations that we've been on in Oklahoma.
Yes,
and
James, let me point out.
South and North Dakota.
Yes, I have been to reservations. Reservations are federal property. They're exempt from state laws. And every time I feel guilty, when I'm in Oklahoma, every time I feel guilty about white privilege, and I go to an Indian casino and don't give them some of my money.
Hey, well, you know, hey, look, it's white privilege. You know, I mean, obviously, I've heard that term as well. You know, and you know what? It's true. You know why? How I know it's true?
No. Let's take the trail of tears. No, let's not
the trail of tears. Gosh, I don't
all right,
get
all right.
There. Because I've got, you know, because I get really here's. Let me tell you why I'm so the personal reason I'm so hell bent on, you know, the anti-racism and teaching critical race theory is because I have two kids. As you know, their mother was Hispanic. You know, you have that was not a big problem. I've never heard you talk about it ever being a problem there. But here in West Virginia, it was a damn problem at the public swimming pool when my kids would go there, and they were darker than everybody else. And the name that they were called, my son, who is James McCormick III, who is now in the, you know, he's got transferred to the 2nd of the 19th Special Forces Group, wonderful young man. He learned real quick about what racism was, and he was shocked because he's like, I'm white. They're like, no, you're not white. You're not white enough, you know, essentially is what they were saying, because they were tan. They took after their mother. And so, you know, my son learned to beat the hell out of people, I'm telling you. And from a young age.
It made you tougher.
You didn't have to name
that boy Sue.
No, I didn't have to name him Sue, but
no, hey,
it was
look,
very
we didn't
hard.
Face that problem with my kids. In fact, I sent my kids to Panama every 3 years so they would learn to speak Spanish fluently, because I knew
right.
how important it was to be bilingual in Spanish. And my kids now, they benefit from it. Okay, so
well,
let me get back to the Trail of Tears.
But yes, the Trail of Tears.
Okay.
Go ahead. Yes.
All right, as a case study. So
yeah.
Summarize again, what is the lesson of the Trail of Tears?
Well, the lesson of the Trail of Tears is that you know, it is a lesson in how, you know, when given the opportunity, one group of people can really, really, you know, wreak havoc on another group of people. In my
the majority.
That's what,
wait. What you're saying
yeah.
is the majority rules. The majority rules. Where you
yeah.
didn't say anything about race. You said
no,
the majority
I didn't have
rules.
To.
Where a group of people who have the majority
right.
in the vote can
right.
tell another, a minority, what to do. That has nothing
right.
to do with race. That has absolutely nothing to do with race.
Well, telling them to get off of your land that you don't own, and because
no, wait,
they're
wait,
an Indian,
you haven't mentioned race yet. You have not
well,
mentioned race. You've only talked
yeah.
about the majority versus the minority.
Rich, what I'm telling you is this, is that it is, you're right, it can be a majority rules thing, but why is that majority pushing them off of their land? It's because they're white, they you know, perceive ownership, and because they have the power, they have the law that backed them. So that
all right.
institutionalized
okay.
racism allowed
okay.
them to there, do that.
Oh, okay,
and,
institutionalized
and
racism is because the majority was white.
That's
right.
That's
what you're saying. Okay.
In that case. In
all
that
right,
case.
So let me walk you through the facts, all right? Because coming from Oklahoma, half our state, was Native American, okay? And the five civilized tribes occupied the eastern half of the state. And I grew up among the Ponca Nation and the Cherokee. And the Cherokee were probably the most prolific of all of them. So let me start telling you about the Cherokee. the Cherokee were, okay, they're five tribes, five nations, tribes, nations, or interchangeable, that were assimilated to white culture the quickest, and they were in the southeastern states. The Choctaw, Cherokee, Choctaw, Chickasaw, and the Seminole were in Virginia. Okay, so those they adopted white man ways rapidly. And you got to understand, after Washington became the president, one of the things he wanted to do, look, here's the reality. And I study the expansion of West, growing up among Native Americans. I'm going to tell you right now, if you didn't adapt, you're going to die. You will not prosper. Okay. So when everybody talks about how the Native American culture was great, you want to still live in the damn teepee without electricity and running water? In fact, the big complaint they have is they don't have electricity and running water. You want the benefits of the white man's culture. Okay. To succeed in that, you have to assimilate to the white man culture, because this is the European culture coming to this, this state of land was going to dominate. All right, to succeed in it, you had to assimilate, and the southeastern nations assimilated the best. And the Cherokee, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm a little biased. I'm going to tell you, the Cherokee probably assimilated better than anything else. And one of the things that the Washington did when he sent all these agents, Indian agents, into the nations in order to teach them farming. And they're hunters, and they look down on farmers. The Cherokee adapted real quick. And they realized not only did they not, it's like if I create a plantation, then if I farm, the whole idea was, a hunting culture required a lot of land. If you get the Native Americans to farm, they didn't need as much land. So we can take all this excess land, this hunting land, and then sell it off to whites. Okay, that was the whole idea. And so the Cherokee really adapted fast to it. And they started burying whites, all these agents. And guess what? Guess what the surnames of most of these Indian agents that were going in, traders and things like that, going, they were Scotch-Irish. So most of it's kind of funny that most of the Cherokee have Scotch-Irish surnames, okay? McIntosh, Bell, whatever. Okay, so come from the Bells, and supposedly the Americans, Cherokee. Well, anyway, so by the time of the Trail of Tears, by the 1830s, when Jackson becomes the president and we get the Indian Removal Act, it is like, okay, we're going to create a permanent Indian frontier that's called the Mississippi River. So let's take all the Indians and move them to the other side to get them to lessen this conflict. But here's the thing I didn't know. I've always been aware of this, but I didn't know until I was reading up on it again today. I always learn something new. That the Indian Removal Act said only if they agree to it. That was the caveat. Okay. So the federal government had to come up with all kinds of ways to entice the Native Americans to move. Problem with the Cherokee Nation is that they had civilized. And not only they had civilized, but many of the prominent Cherokee owned plantations and they owned slaves. So in their the descendants of this warrior culture, it's like, well, they don't have to physically. See, farming was actually the work of women, not men. And so they go like, oh, well, we can get slaves to do the farming for us. All right. So the Cherokee and the Choctaw and Chickasaw and all those, they had become slaveholders. Not everybody, but the wealthier ones. And they owned these big plantations. But the real problem came when you talk about greed. Gold was discovered in Georgia. Dahlonega. That when I went to ranger school, we went to the Dahlonega, the Klein Mountain. So for the mountain phase, and so they discovered gold in Dahlonega, and all of us, if you look at wherever they discovered gold, being in for a trouble, the Black Hills, whatever. Okay, that is a definite case of white man greed. School system inherently being racist, it wasn't in this case. When you really get into the details, so there was a lawsuit, okay, that was sent all the way to the Supreme Court. So you have the state of Georgia basically saying it can impose that because the Cherokee live in Georgia, that they can, that Georgia law, state laws are superior to the Cherokee laws. And the Supreme Court ruled that no, that these are treaties, and that this, the nations, the treaties with the nations are federal laws and that are superior to federal. But again, this until the Civil War was waged, there was always this debate between who is superior to state laws versus federal laws. So anyway, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the Cherokee, that that Cherokee only submitted to federal laws and not state. All right. So the Georgians, yeah, they're greedy and they want Cherokee lands. And the Cherokee realized, hey, it's inevitable. We're going to have to move. And keep in mind, the Cherokee have been migrating west. There's a group, if you look up old settlers, when you look up the Cherokee, there's so many factions. The old settler groups, look, they didn't like the whites in the first place. The whites were encroaching on Cherokee land. They're like, let's get away from these guys. They had already moved west. And you got to understand, the Cherokee lived in the lowlands of the Appalachian Mountains. They're hillbillies. And they found in the Ozarks of southern Missouri and northeastern Arkansas, looked a lot like where they lived in Georgia and North Carolina. And they migrated. They were escaping whites long before that. They were voluntarily moved. All right. And so Jackson says, all right, here's the deal. We're going to offer you some land in the Indian Territory, which is now eastern Oklahoma. And they said, which is hilly, which is very much like the territory you live in now. And you got to move. And so, and you talk about assimilation. The Cherokee, inspired by the American Constitution, the government had written their own constitution and created a constitutional government with an elected principal chief. And at the time of the Indian removal, John Ross, who was 1/8 Cherokee and was blue-eyed, was the principal chief of the Cherokee. All right. So what you have, let me tell you, John Ross owns a big plantation. He owns a landing, a crossing, I forgot the name of the river, but the land that he owns will become the city of Chattanooga. That's how prominent he is. So what you're going to find is when you start studying this is those Cherokee who are the most opposed to removal have the most to lose because they are the biggest plantation owners. Whereas the rest of there's another faction of the Cherokee, which will be named the Rich Bottineau faction, which is saying, like, look, it's inevitable. They're going to force us to move. Let's negotiate the best deal we possibly can. And they do. But the problem is they don't reflect the constitutionally elected government. They end up getting $5 million. Jackson pays $5 million to move. That's a lot of money now. That was a hell of a lot of money back then. Okay, so so the Cherokee nation itself was divided on this moving, and enough of them got together led by some major prominent Cherokees, which is Major Ridge, John Ridge, and Elias Bodenot, and the Waities. Stan Waity is a prominent one, and they took the money and they fled. So John Ross is there going, hey, wait a minute. They don't represent us. They are not duly elected. And the Supreme Court ruled in their favor. But the problem is Jackson is like, you know what? I've already paid for the money, the land. You've got to move. Okay. And see, the thing is, they had 2 years after that contract of assault signed, not by the legitimate government, but by a faction of the Cherokee Nation, a large faction. And when I was surprised by how many signers there were to it. Okay, and if you want to talk about this subtle institutional racism, because I've seen it with the Plains tribes too, the Plains Nations, is where it's like all we got to do is get one prominent chief of one of these nations to sign it. And he represents the whole nation. When the thing is about, except for the Cherokee, they've already adopted a constitutional government. But when you're talking about the Plains tribes, no, they're pure democracy. And that's, no person represents everybody. Everybody represents themselves, and they follow certain people. So anyway, Jackson basically says, hey, I just paid $5 billion for your land. You to move. And when you talk about the government, the army being complicit in this, General Jessup was originally tasked to move to Cherokee, and he resigned from that job. He opposed it. He resigned. And Winfield Scott was then appointed to it. And when you hear the Cherokee accounts of it, that they talk about the army, this was inevitable. The army follows orders. Now, you've got a general who said, I ain't following that order. So he is returned to his normal duties, and he is replaced by another general. So the general didn't even identify by it. But hold on, I'm getting the phone door. Okay. So so General Wilson Scott isn't taking over. And from the Cherokee account, the military was doing everything they could to help these guys out. The Cherokee never blamed the Army for this. The Army did everything they could to make it. The problem with the deaths, and we're talking about a large percentage, look, the large percentage of the Cherokee have already been migrating west. It's the holdouts, the ones who have the most to lose, that are there. And the problem is because they kept delaying, waiting for like a reprieve of sentence, they had to move in the winter. And that is why there were so many deaths. That is why it's called the Trail of Tears, because they sold out. All right. Now, when they got to the Indian Territory and they finally settled in, do you want to know who they blamed? They didn't blame systemic racism. They didn't blame the government. They blamed Jackson. They absolutely hated Jackson. You want to know why they hated Jackson? You want to know why Jackson became the president of the United States? Because he won the Battle of New Orleans. You want to know why he was put in charge of that battle? Because his previous victory was the Battle of Horseshoe Bend, which was a battle with the Cherokee, with the Creek Indians, who were hereditary enemies of the Cherokee. And the Cherokee allied with Jackson to beat the Creek, which is funny. I can't remember the name of this one Cherokee warrior. And he goes, had I known then what was going to happen, I would have killed Jackson on the spot, okay? Blame Jackson. The Cherokees hated Jackson because they
I cut it short, man. We're at 3 minutes now.
No, I told you. I was worried. I knew we'd never get to this whole definition of liberalism. But the thing is,
we've got a long way.
Go ahead.
we got a long way, and I wanted to say, you know, that the definition for critical race theory, I think, has been misquoted, and I just ask people to go in, don't look at the Fox News or the CNN version of it, but just go and Google critical race theory, go to Wikipedia, go to the dictionary, go to
a
place
that's
incredible.
It's a theory. It's not fact.
Right.
It's a theory is interpretation of
facts.
Which means if you're going to teach that in the school you have, if you're going to teach critical thinking, you also have to teach the alternative.
We don't have time to get into that. But ultimately, I think that we don't have time to get in. We only got 2 minutes and 45 seconds. but the point that I make is that critical race theory would allow the telling of all sides. It's not just a one-sided thing. And if we look at the
definition, that's fucking, I'm going to tell you right now,
Rich,
teaching one theory and saying that's going to present all sides,
Rich,
fucking,
I'm telling
right
you,
now. You're
Rich,
lying to yourself. You
Rich,
present
that's a terrible
several
thing
theories,
that you said to me.
You're presenting
Rich,
several sides.
Rich,
that one theory,
that's a terrible thing that you just
one
said to
argument,
me.
And that's propaganda.
Number one, I don't lie. I don't lie. I'm telling you, I read
no,
it straight
no,
out of the
but
definition.
No, you may be misinformed, James.
No, I'm not misinformed either. I read the definition for all 100,000
listeners. If you present one theory,
I am
are
not
you presenting,
presenting
all sides?
The theory
you're
is,
not.
A, is...
You're presenting one side only.
Okay. Folks, we're just going to have to end it at that. It's basically, you know, it's about race, not just one race. It's about races, okay? It's not just about one race. Don't let your minds be swayed. Go read about it yourself. That's what I would tell all of the listeners out there, because you will get, you know, many definitions, and most of them are wrong. I decide to go and read, and this is what I found, that it is a study of critical race theory is about all races. It's not just the whites or the boogeymen and everybody else is oppressed. That's not the truth. That's not what it's intended to teach. And I think that's what's getting people hung up, and that's what's getting people all wrapped around the axle. So, again, folks, thanks for coming on and listening to us on Continue Mission. We're on here every Friday night. And we look forward to having you on next Friday. And I just want to say, you know, God bless each and every one of you. Take an opportunity. Be kind to one another. Do something good. Get up. Get moving. Enjoy life, because life is short. And we don't want it to, you know, we don't want to end our lives and say something or do something that we, you know, we regret later. But spend time with your loved ones. And, hey, look, remember that we care about you. That's the reason why we're on here every Friday night. So we'll catch you next Friday on Continue Mission. God bless and good night, everyone. Presenting one.